Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace. Get down, from the south to the north, yeah, moving up the right way, we are all that, and across the history of this vast continent of countries, the drum.
Weekly Thursday night call. Our topic tonight is, what does it mean for Black people to take full responsibility for our economic destiny? We will be right back as the music continues.
In the beginning was the beat of the drum, which began in the beginning to beat freedom.
Once again, family, we thank you for being on our weekly Thursday night Us Lifting Us call. As usual, we always have a very good, relevant topic to talk about that's related to our model, our Us Lifting Us economic model. And yes, we are the drum calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. And we welcome you to our, once again, our weekly program. We're here every Thursday at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., and Dare to Win is the place where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build a global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path to making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build the machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. And if you're on to join the conversation by telephone, you can reach us at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And press the number 1 on your keypad when you've got a comment or a question. And you can also listen by internet radio at www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And once you're at the site, you look for on the right side of the screen, the gold or yellow bar that says Ulu Radio. You click on Ulu Radio, and then you scroll down and you see the globe with the headphones, and you click on Listen Live, and that will put you on the program, the live call by internet radio. And I am your host this evening. I'm Brother Thurman, the Us Lifting Us member. And also with us as our guest is Brother Kimbisi, also us lifting us member. Brother Kimbisi, how you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great, Brother Thurman. Always good to hear your voice and have opportunity to share with the Ulu family. And I'm excited and looking forward to our conversation tonight.
Good, good. And so our question to start this evening is, what does it mean for Black people to take full responsibility for our economic destiny? Brother Kimbisi, please go ahead and speak to us about that subject.
Certainly, Brother Thurman. I thought that we would begin 2020 talking about the Ulu 10-point appeal and plan, and explore on tonight's conversation the first principle of our plan. And as you indicated, as Black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nation. And so let's begin our conversation tonight by talking about our identity. Whether we call ourselves Negro, Black, Afro-American, African-American, Africans in America, ancient Moors, or Hebrew Israelites, what we all have in common is the skin pigment melanin, which makes our skin appear in a range of colors, from blue-black to brown, red, and yellow. The people with the least amount of melanin appear as pale to white. As Black people, although we are crystal clear that Black as a color is not a language, does not designate a specific landmass, and does not reflect a culture, yet Black as a color becomes of paramount global importance because of racism, white supremacy, and the economic system, capitalism, derived from it to gain global hegemony or global power. Our venerated ancestor, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, years ago gave us this invaluable definition of racism, white supremacy. And she said it is a global system of domination and control where people who classify themselves as white dominate and control people they classify as non-white, and this is the most important part of that definition in my view, for the purpose of genetic survival. What we as Black people have not understood is that people who classify themselves as white see themselves in a life and death struggle for survival. Donald Trump can defecate on the Constitution, destroy the government, steal everybody blind, and lie about everything, just as long as at the end of the day, people who classify themselves as white still control the planet. White people cannot share power. They are one-tenth of the global population. They are a genetic recessive skin color. And in their minds, if they lose power, Black people who are melanin dominant and nine-tenths of the global population will annihilate them, will annihilate white people in a matter of a few generations. In other words, Black people are an existential threat to whiteness, and therefore white people must contain control at all costs, even when it means allowing the planet to burn up as long as they maintain power. We have to be very clear about what is being said genetically. In other words, Black folks are not going to shoot them. They're not going to blow bombs up in their neighborhoods. None of that. Just by the mere outplaying of genetic determination, Black people have the power to annihilate whiteness in a matter of a few generations, if people are allowed just to love each other indiscriminately. So white nationalism, racism, or white supremacy, choose your own terminology, is revealing its irrationality and utter insanity when it is incapable of dealing with gun violence and mass murders with assault weapons, incapable of dealing with a cancer pandemic driven by the hyperconsumption of animal protein, an alienating culture that has resulted in a devastating opioid addiction death crisis, a national obesity epidemic that is killing people by the millions, and an impending climate collapse because it can't relinquish its use of and dependence on fossil fuels because this is the source of its global power. So white people and their colored surrogates lie like bandits rather than acknowledge the root cause of their fear-driven existence. Black and brown people and other people of color who intend to and plan to survive and thrive must build a new social structure from the ground up, beginning with a profoundly different economic base and value system in this first half of the 21st century. Therefore, if you are a melanated person, you have two choices and only two choices. You can stay with the status quo, that is, allow capitalist society to continue towards global destruction and extinction of the planet, or roll up your sleeves, join together with other melanated people, and build a new society based on cooperation, equity, and justice, or the term that we use in Ulu, Ma'at, the traditional African values of truth and justice and harmony and balance and order and reciprocity and righteousness. Let me pause there. I've said a little bit, Brother Thurman, and you may have some questions, or there may be some comments and questions from our listening audience.
Yes, thank you so much for that very good information. And family members, you can join the conversation at 929-477-2789, and press 1 on your keypad when you're ready with your question or comment. And right now we don't have any questions, Brother Kambizi. I'd like to, I think that your last few lines, your last paragraph, when you talk about that we have two choices, it's like it's a fork in the road and we can choose the to allow the capitalist society to continue with their destruction, or roll up our sleeves and get busy as melanated people to build. And what worries me is that in the process of socialization and miseducation of our people, I feel hurt to think about how many people, if we pointed them to the fork of the road tomorrow, and one sign on the right side said, "The way to build for melanated people," and the other side, the left side, says, "The way it's always been, and the way that you've been socialized to be comfortable with." I'm worried because of the process of socialization and miseducation, how many people would still feel uncomfortable to take the right side and they take the left side.
I understand exactly what you're saying, Brother Thurman. And what we hope to do through our broadcast and the work that we do in Ulu is to make it clear to our community that we do have a choice. We call it the clear choice, that we have the resources internally. We have $1.3 trillion flowing through our fingers on an annual basis. I think someone said that if African Americans were a country, we would be the seventh wealthiest country on the planet. So we have everything necessary to carry on the task, the work of building an alternative economy, which is the building of the foundation of a new society. Many of us grew up being led to think that politics is the process of gaining and maintaining and using power, and that first you have to gain political power, and then you can change the reality in which you are living. And I think that basically is a misnomer. Real power begins in the economy, because the economy is the economic base of the society. In other words, every society is based on their ability to provide themselves with food, clothing, and shelter. And the system that they use to do that's the economy. And so we are waking up now to the truth that this economy does not serve us as black people in this country. We know that slavery as a system enabled white folks to become unbelievably wealthy on the backs of black labor. That, you know, we picked the cotton, the tobacco, the sugarcane, all of that backbreaking work we did, and provided the financial basis for this country to become the most economically powerful country on the planet. So we've already built civilizations before, and now we're being presented with the opportunity and the invitation to build society once again, and to build it once again on the basis of truth and equity and fairness and justice and respect for all. So it's a matter of, if we don't do this, then we're looking sure destruction in the eye, I think, Brother Thurman. And so I'm glad that we find ourselves at this crossroads, because it means that all of us have to wake up and accept the reality that we find ourselves. And we can no longer pretend that our skin color doesn't make us a moving target. If we were not black, if we were some other shade, if we were white, then the country would still be in a crisis, but they wouldn't have us as an obvious target to shoot at. So our skin color is actually our passport to say to ourselves, no one is coming to rescue us. we've got to do this. We've got to lead this work. And the exciting thing is we have the resources and the know-how to do it. I'll pause there, Brother Thurman. There may be a comment or a question in our listening audience.
Yes, we do have a couple of callers. And so caller with the last four numbers, 3440, please give us your question or comment. Tell us first who you are and where you're calling from, your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, greetings, brother. I'm glad. This is Brother Shabaka from Baltimore, but happened to be in Miami, a little bit warmer today. And really enjoying the show, and I just wanted to pose a question, because the topic is extremely important. What do you say to those folks? And, you know, you spoke a little bit earlier about it, about the indoctrination that we experience, but still, you know, even regardless of the indoctrination, you do have people to say, well, you know, not all whites are bad, and, you know, we've been helped by, you know, the NAACP, which was helped by Jewish people, and a number of other organizations in which whites contribute. And some of them are experiencing some of the problems that, you know, maybe, you know, many of us who are blacks are experiencing. What do you say to those people? And I'll hang up and listen to your response. And thanks again for allowing me the opportunity to raise a question.
Brother Shabaka, it's good to hear your voice. I'm jealous. I'd like to be in Miami with you, to be telling you the truth. But you're absolutely right. There are those in our community who that's their default argument, and they're right. I mean, we have no no ill will towards white people in general. We're just saying that we recognize that capitalism is an enslaving system, and we choose not to continue to be enslaved. Now, the interesting thing about an enslavement system is that all participants are enslaved, whether you're the master or the slave. You still are locked into participating in an enslavement system. I think one of the things that America and the world in general has come to realize is that our technological capability has exceeded our sociological constructs enable us to manage and direct the technology. So we've reached the point where the social understanding must catch up with the technological capabilities that we have in order for us to direct how we go forward and not kill ourselves. What we're saying is that us lifting us, we're not the only organization advocating for cooperative economic systems, but our system is based on an African value construct. We're very clear that we want to build a society that is just and righteous, that is based on truth, that is based on loving relationships, and how do we work together, how do we share the resources of the planet in a way that is sustainable and viable. We can't do that using values of competition at all cost, where profits take precedence over people, where militarism grinds the rest of the planet into poverty and destruction, where materialism is celebrated over clearly the role that spirit must play. So we're advocating for a set of values that we think ultimately are the most human expressions that we've seen that benefit black people, brown people, yellow people, white people, and that provide a philosophical framework to lead the planet into the 21st century and beyond. So we Brother Shabaka, I think you would agree that we have no argument with folks because they're white. We're just simply saying that the system that they have built to prosper themselves doesn't work for everybody. And the time has come for us to build an alternative model, and that's what ULU is advocating and leading our people to understand and to implement. Brother Thurman, you might have another comment to that, or there may be another question.
Yes, I do, but we do have another caller on the line. Caller with the last four numbers, 6093. 6093, please give us your name. Tell us where you're calling from and your question or comment.
Thank you so much. Yes, this is Sister Nanana, and I'm calling from Denver, Colorado.
Is it 70 degrees where you are, Sister Nanana?
No, it's far from it. We're in the 30s right now, so I would be envious of those temperatures in Florida as well, for sure. So let me pose my question, and thank you for addressing this subject. It's certainly one that bears us giving lots of thought and energy to. The question that I have is concerning your mentioning of the whole arena of DNA and of people of European or white ancestry being in a situation where with the recessive gene, that there's a pretty good probability that they are literally dying out. And so I have two questions. Can you give us any more detailed information, any evidence of this lessening of the numbers of people of Caucasian descent? And then the second question is, what is your thought if, in fact, all of them do die out? What is the probability, in your opinion, that the capitalistic racist system would then die out, or would it be continued? And if so, who would continue it? So I know I've mentioned a lot of things in there, but hopefully you can respond to the two questions that I asked. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Nanana. Two very important questions. I would say, first of all, that we know that white birth rate, or the birth rate of certainly the white community in the United States, has been flat for at least the last 50 years. In other words, they are there. More people, more white people are dying than are being born. So that's been a perennial problem for the white population in the United States and across Europe. I think, Sister Nanana, that question becomes extremely important because demographers who have looked at American society have said that by 2030, America will be a majority-minority country. In other words, the black population and the Latino population will exceed the white population. And that is why Trump has started his campaign when he was running for presidency, bashing the migrants and the Hispanic population coming in from South America and Mexico. That is their gravest existential threat to their majority, or to their being able to be a majority in the southern United States. So the whole closing of the border, the corralling of families, the killing of children, the separation of children from their families, all of that demonic and diabolical behavior is driven by the very real threat they perceive of being outnumbered by Hispanics in the United States, particularly in states like Texas and the border states, New Mexico, southern parts of California. So that whole immigration attack and assault is not just something that fell out of the sky. They are doing everything imaginable to restrict the growing population of Hispanics in the United States, because those communities will soon exceed the white populations in those communities and will outvote them in a democratic system, which is the second reason why they are doing so much work around voter suppression, taking large segments of black and brown people off the voter rolls, putting up barriers, allowing black and Latinos to vote. In other words, they're completely subverting democracy in a way of preserving their very false power base in the country. So, yeah, I think to that first question, that's the reality. Their birth rate is flat. The Hispanic community is growing very rapidly, as is the African American community, and that represents an existential threat to their survival. And then to your second question, Sister Nanana, I would say that capitalism as a system has a certain amount of inertia built into it. So even if you know, they were to die off within a generation or two, other groups have taken over that system and have benefited from it, and would likely continue it if they could. As diabolical as the system is, and as demonic as it is, you would think that most people, having seen the ravages of capitalism, would be more than willing to let it die. But sad to say that there have been Africans on the continent, African Americans in this country, who have embraced capitalism very, very wholeheartedly. They've benefited from it. They have become millionaires and billionaires, and have made no critique of the system, and don't seem to be too concerned about whether or not, I mean, they're more concerned to see it continue than not. So I think we would fool ourselves that the system would just eventually collapse if Europeans and European-descended people weren't there to keep it in place. But I think the way history unfolds, that in spite of the number of people who benefit from it, it is still only 1% of the global population. And that 1% eventually will have to give way to the 99% who are demanding an alternative economic model that is equitable for the majority of the people on the planet. I'll stop there, Sister Nanana and Brother Thurman. There may be some other comments or thoughts that you want to get in.
Yes, there. I'm sure there's more. We're going to just take a quick music break, and we'll be right back, family. All right, family, we want to go ahead and continue with the conversation. And as we were talking about the responsibility for our economic destiny, and Brother Kimbizi, we were talking about identity as Black people and what it obliges us to respond to. And there might be, and we were also talking about discussing that responsibility. But I know there's more segments to the conversation that you wanted to add, so please just continue on with the conversation.
Well, thank you, Brother Thurman. To pick up where we left off, I wanted to be very clear that first and foremost, we have to at least acknowledge that as Black people, we have this melanin in common, and that because of that, we have a certain reality that we cannot escape. But also because of that, we have a certain reality that beckons us to take seriously what we are facing and to come forward with a solution that we can implement and that will allow us to not only survive but to thrive. So I would say what we're saying is that once we acknowledge the fact that we are black, that we're in a hostile environment, and that we must work together to find a solution, then the next thing is to take responsibility means to be able to respond. In other words, this is not a blame game. It's not something that we've done and because we've messed up, we find ourselves in this situation. No, we're simply taking a step back, taking a deep breath, and, okay, this is our reality, and how do we respond to this reality based on the strengths and the abilities that we have? This is very different from reacting to a situation. We know that capitalism is a brutal assault on black minds and black bodies, and that too often black people find ourselves reacting to this assault rather than being able to respond to life in this hostile environment. And this is important. Slavery did not so much as end in 1864 at the close of the Civil War as it morphed from chattel slavery to wage slavery. And now we find ourselves living in what Ezra Aharon calls chattel freedom in his book, Sovereign Psyche. So he says that people of color and black people in particular are living in a situation of chattel freedom. In other words, the chains have been taken off of our bodies, and but our stigma as chattel still remains. In other words, black lives do not matter. And if they did matter, there would not be a Black Lives Matter movement. You follow what I'm saying, Brother Thurman?
Yes,
I
do.
The reason Black Lives does not matter is because the stigma of chattel, that is, black people as the property of white masters, has not been eradicated. And that's why when we find ourselves in situations of challenge, the first thing we always have to assert is that we are valuable as people. We always have to fight to establish our value as human beings and our right to be on the planet as human beings. Whereas white folks don't have to make that fight. So we are existing in a condition of chattel freedom. Though we no longer wear physical chains, we are still viewed by at least 40% of white people, that is the Trump followers, as chattel. Economists tell us that American productivity has increased dramatically over the last 50 years, but that wages have remained stagnant. So how should intelligent black folks, workers, wage slaves, respond to their wages not rising faster than inflation? We must build an alternative economy wherein we control the value of our labor. And that is exactly what the cooperative economic movement allows working people to do. By organizing worker-owned cooperatives and other cooperative forms, workers and people, community people, have created societies where they now control the means of production rather than leaving control of their economic destinies in the hands of the 1% who only continue to exploit us. And I use that phrase, control the means of production, intentionally. Capitalism is an economic model where the factories, the mineral resources, the insurance institutions, the banking institutions, all of that are privately owned and controlled in a system where the economic infrastructure is in the hands of private owners. There is only democracy for the private owners, so that when we, through Us Lifting Us and other organizations that are advocating for cooperative businesses to be established, every time we organize a cooperative business, we are transferring the control of the economy from the private sector to the public sector, from private ownership to group ownership, from private hands to the hands of the community as a whole. And so that is one of the most important things that we have to do. To be free or to remain enslaved is our choice. We have to shift our thinking about what is possible. We can remain on the capitalist plantation, or we can strike out like Harriet Tubman or Fannie Lou Hamer for freedom and create different possibilities for ourselves and our children. And yes, this involved a degree of risk, to be sure. Paulo Freire in Pedagogy of the Oppressed writes, "Fear of freedom, of which its possessor is not necessarily aware, makes him see ghosts. Such an individual is actually taking refuge in an attempt to achieve security, which he prefers to the risk of liberty." Freire goes on to quote Hegel, who says, "It is solely by risking life that freedom is obtained." So oftentimes what our community has been guilty of, I think, Brother Thurman, is we're seeking security. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to disturb our comfort. We want to ride nice, we want to live nice, we want to wear the Jordans and the clothes. And if the promise of that can still be had within capitalism, then we'll stay inside of capitalism. But when we get really clear that we no longer want to be enslaved, whether it's chattel slavery or wage slavery, when we're clear that what we want is freedom, and the only way that we can really get to freedom is by controlling the means of production, the infrastructure of the economy, then that means we're going to have to take some risks. We're going to have to stick our necks out and begin to build the businesses, the cooperative businesses, in which we are co-owners. Then we can experience and enjoy real freedom and real self-determination and real security. You started to say something, Brother Thurman?
Oh, I was just agreeing with what you had said earlier about that challenge about freedom and the quote that you had given. We've got to have that. Those kind of things we need to have as a conversation. It's like it said, it is solely by risking life that freedom is obtained. And really, in the natural world, that is just a common practice anyway. You know, without Europeans, even though Europeans are a much greater threat to the freedom of people and the planet and the universe, but risking of your life is part of life anyway. So to go to the river to get some water, you could fall in and drown. You go to the river, and depending on where you are, you had to be wary of snakes and crocodiles. But so we've been given the illusion that to live in this so-called civilized and capitalistic system is free. It ain't never been free, especially for us. But but when you encompass everything, everybody and the ecosystem, the environment, since their system has come along, it has never been free.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to lastly say, if our heart lets us look ahead for the babies and the babies to come, we would have to ask ourselves, how could we leave them in this hell? And as John Henry Clark said, what will we tell our children if they ask, how come y'all didn't do something about this?
Right. You're absolutely right. So this brings me to my third point in our conversation this evening, Brother Thurman. The importance of building an alternative economy that serves black people and people of color and right-thinking people all around the world is an act of risking liberty. It's an act of striking out for freedom. And this is the point that I want to make. An economy, while it is the system of the making and distribution of needed goods and services in a society, it also structures a society. It is the skeleton of a civilization. It defines the quality, position, and nature of relationships between persons in the society. The economy assigns value to every person in the society. And in contemporary capitalist society, we experience boss-worker relations. We experience billionaire millionaires, the 1% relating to people who earn, say, only $50,000 or $30,000 or $20,000 or less, the 99%. We experience life as a series of hierarchical social relationships between superior financial beings over inferior financial beings. We are told we are equal, yet the income inequality is so glaring between us. It is like we exist on different planets. We find ourselves alienated from each other and ultimately even from ourselves, which then sets the condition for the devaluation of each person and the environment itself. And all this leads to the rending or the tearing of the social fabric and the violent robberies, beatings, and killings by both citizens and police follows. It is the historical requirement of our time in 2020 to rebuild human society by taking the first steps of building a cooperative economy in time to replace the collapsing economic system of capitalism. So I just wanted to reiterate, Brother Thurman, that in addition to being the system that allows for the production and the distribution of needed goods and services, that's the first half of what an economic system does. But the more important function of an economic system is that it defines the way people relate to each other. It assigns the value of each person in the system. It is the actual skeleton that allows the society to stand up. And so the problem that we're facing is the skeleton of America is demonic. It is exploitive. It is violent. It is sociopathic and psychopathic. And as such, it can only produce death and destruction. It must be replaced by a human system guided by spirit and cooperation and love, and truth and justice and righteousness and order and balance and harmony and reciprocity. In other words, it has to be guided by Ma'at or a system that has similar values. So let me pause there and see if there are questions or comments or reactions to what I've just said, Brother Thurman.
Yes, family members, if you got any questions or comments, you can reach us at 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your keypad with your question or comment. And this is just a very serious message, and you spelled it out that we've got to change things away. I would think that as your last 2 or 3 minutes was talking about the brutal the killings and the robberies, and that system just nurtures that. And it as I was listening to your words, it made me think people should want to flee from that. And so if they came to the fork in the road and they saw the right road to take, they should flee from that. And we
I
would
agree.
Be like James Brown. Yes.
No, go ahead. You would say like James Brown, were you getting ready to say?
Yeah, James Brown, we would be getting on the good foot, and we'd be sliding on down the road to righteousness again quickly.
Right, right. I mean, we had a situation. I live in Atlanta, and I'm in a community called Decatur. And about a couple of miles from where I live, a 70-year-old woman was at she was washing her car at a car wash, and some teenagers carjacked her, punched her in the face. She had to get stitches and constructive surgery on her face, and stole her car. And I'm just wondering, you know, what has happened in our community that teens would do violence and harm to a 70-year-old woman? That says something about the devaluation of us as humans in the eyes of ourselves. We're not talking about in the eyes of the dominant culture. These were black youths who assaulted and assailed a black elder for no other reason than to joyride in her car. Something is terribly wrong when that's the ethos in our community, and we have to change that.
I agree. Yeah, those type things should make us just to be more urgent to get busy to correct the situation and the cooperative economics model and building that economic power would put us in position where we would be having businesses and institutions that would be teaching our people better, including about spirit, as you mentioned, because they're lost and confused and they don't totally comprehend the impact of what they're doing, and we can help them. I mean, there's many different healing modalities that could help a lot of them. That's why in some of the schools they're incorporating time, and instead of just time out, but taking time to go in a quiet place and meditate, and children are getting beneficial results. And so we have, and so whatever the problem is, it's all solvable. We just need to have the organization and the resources of whatever that we can do it. We've got the intellectual capability and the spiritual capability, and even if we don't know it, if we just get quiet and go within to spirit, as you said, the answers are there.
Right, right. Absolutely. So,
and just like when you talked about what was done to the sister, there's got to be an urgency in all areas of our people activity. And so it's just like, if we're being brutalized, why would we continue to buy from people that brutalize us? Why would we continue to buy things that are not necessary? So it's just like years ago, they came out in the African community and said that for the month of October, November, December, to only purchase what you needed. Not other things, not trinkets and toys, but only what you needed. And if we took that attitude, which the others that are getting in, gaining wealth around us, and not just white people, they are loyal to buying only what they need from others, but they try to as much as they can only with themselves. But they are deliberate in for the most part in not purchasing from us.
And you know, you raise the point, I think, that is part of the solution that us lifting us is presenting to our community. We have to take responsibility and be intentional about how we spend money.
Yes.
Because each transaction in a capitalist system is a way of reinforcing the values of that system. So every time a dollar changes hands, it is a way of reinforcing the expendability of black life and the valuelessness of black life. And the only way that we can counter that is by being intentional with where we spend each and every dollar. And so,
yes,
to your point, Brother Thurman, when we are deliberate about making sure that we are spending our dollars with black institutions, and preferably black institutions that we own and control, That is how we maximize the power of our dollar.
Yes.
And so when you were suggesting, you know, that from October, November, December, we only purchase that which we need, what we're really talking about is a dynamic boycott of those institutions that exploit our people and drain resources from our community. If we could get on the same page with that, that would be awesome. But more to a solution for us is to build an institution that we control. And that's what us Lifting Us has been doing for the past 7 years. We are saying we are pooling our resources, and we are using those pooled resources to open up cooperative businesses. These are businesses that are equally owned and controlled by the members of our community. I can't make it any clearer than that. Think about if the Kroger in your community, whether it's Kroger or Publix, when you go in there, that is not an institution that you control. You purchase food items from them, but you do not control that institution. Over against that, we are advocating opening stores, whether it's a grocery store, whether it's a dry cleaners, whether it's a beauty supply store, whatever the business is, these businesses can be opened and operated as cooperatives so that the community owns the business. And so when our children step inside of them, they can look to their parents and say, we own this. When the profits are tabulated, a portion of those profits come back to us as the owners of this business. The part of the surplus of those businesses goes into operating African-centered schools and African-centered community hospitals and whatever institutions that we need to thrive and survive. So we're not begging others to provide us with the supports necessary to healthy community. We're taking responsibility to say we will provide these for ourselves. And that's what excites me about the opportunity that Us Lifting Us is bringing to our community. This is a way of proactively and positively working our way out of a negative situation and doing it in a way that models for other communities how effective this can be, and also preparing us, Brother Thurman, for something that you talk about all the time. As capitalism collapses, now we have the institutions in place that can sustain us.
You're so right.
And so in the last minute or two, I would just invite people to go to our website, usliftingus.com, and check us out. Look at our model. Click on the slide presentation so you get a full understanding of what Us Lifting Us is doing. And if this resonates with you, if it makes sense, then click the join tab, and we'll send you the documents and the full explanation. It does require a $50 annual membership fee. We will in turn look over your application and make sure you are who you say you are, because this is an exclusive community in that it is only available to Black people of African ancestry. But if that's who you are, then welcome aboard. I'll stop there, Brother Thurman. You may be some things that you need to share with us.
Yes, and I just simply add that you can definitely go to the website, usliftingus.com, and review the video and click on join, as it was said. And if you got further questions, you can email us at info@usliftingus.com. That's info@usliftingus.com. And also, you can call the home office at 404-592-2780. That's 404-592-2780. All right, Brother Kambiza, any final words beyond that?
Just that, by all means, visit the website. Join us in this work. This is an exciting time to be on the planet. The ancestors have presented us with this amazing opportunity, and they have challenged us and called us to build this alternative economic model by building cooperative businesses that we own and control. Let's do this, people. It's long overdue.
Ashe.
Thank you.